Dear Mom, I know you've tried to protect me from who I am, and you've said my life before you adopted me doesn't matter, but it does matter. It matters because I still have visions of the place where I was born. I've heard all the whispers. I know what happened in that town where I was born. And I know you've tried to protect me from its horror for 19 years. Well, today I'm going back to that little abandoned town called Gatlin. Home to the truth. Love, Hannah.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Children of the Corn series, part of the Three Men in a Retrospective's look at the film adaptations of author Stephen King.
Give yourself. It's his will.
Join Garrett.
Don't underestimate the power of my vision.
Matt.
He speaks to me always, but today he is displeased.
And Adam.
Is this how they come to a complete stop in California?
As they find out who of the three of them really agrees with he who walks behind the rose.
He who walks behind the rose will decide your fate.
Will the three podcasters survive this trek through rows and rows of corn?
I got your eternal flame right here!
Find out next. Courtesy of Percolated Media.
Come on, let's go!
Children of the Corn, 2009. It was originally aired September 26, 2009 on the Sci-Fi Network, and this was directed by Donald B. Borchers. Boy, so much to talk about with this one. I want to get to this real quick. Way back when we did the original Children of the Corn, which seems like months ago at this point, I mentioned that there was a producer on it named Donald B. Borchers we need to remember. Well, here he is. He's back. It's been 25 years. It had been lingering in his head that, you know, Children of the Corn, the original, is really well remembered, but there are things about it I kind of want to change. I kind of want to do it right. So he stepped up, and he wanted to do this theatrical, guys. He wanted to get the right amount of backing and put this thing out in theaters. Then that fell through, and he eventually settled on an airing on the Sci-Fi Network, and then a few months later, there was a DVD release, which is probably the version each of us saw. Matt, were you aware of the background of this, that we had the original producer coming back?
No, my involvement in detailing this movie was limited to tracking down a way to watch it. It was not a single streaming platform, and I checked them all, ranging from Amazon to Tubi. I even searched YouTube to look for a fragmented compilation where it's like part 1 of 30 because they don't want to get flagged for copyright. But nope, I had to buy a used DVD copy of this.
Holy shit.
Quote-unquote movie, because there was no other way I could watch it. Vince, I can use this as a tax write-off for work.
So, Donald B. Borchers wanted to bring respectability to Children of the Corn. He went to the guy himself, Mr. Stephen King, tried getting him involved in this, and he got a letter back from his lawyers saying that Mr. King wants nothing to do with this. Respectfully, just do what you want. So he did. He made the movie, and then he sent a copy of it to King himself and said, I know you don't want to be involved, but take a look at this, and if you approve it, can we put your name on as a screenplay credit? And King saw it, and he gave his approval and put his name on the screenplay. So when we see in the beginning of this, there were credits that said written by Donald B. Borchers and Stephen King. That's where that comes from. King just kind of gave his blessing, and here we are. So that shocked me. I didn't think King would want anything to do with Children of the Corn 25 years later. But Adam, here it is. He has a credit here.
Yeah, he probably asked for him to make one of his mortgage payments, and he'd agree to do so.
Yeah, probably.
Or he just got confused and thought that he was back in the 70s and read the exact same original screenplay, because that's what we get.
Kinda, sorta. Yeah, so Borchers wanted to bring respectability to it. He put together a cast. We have somebody here, Candace McClure, who we've reviewed before, way back when we did the Carrie retrospective. She was in the 2002 TV movie. She shows up here. So here we are. This is how we get Children of the Corn 2009. Now, Adam, you've seen many versions of this. You've suffered through many versions of this. Were you looking forward to the fact that, okay, we're not going to go off what we did? I'm hitting the reset button and starting over.
Anything that I would have been okay with, or happy with, if you want to use that term. Yes, that was it. Being like, okay, you're just going to take that original story and you're going to remake it. Okay, fine. This thing has gone so far off the rails and out of the fields that I think that's not necessarily a bad choice. Sci-fi, that doesn't completely throw me off. I've been watching sci-fi movies since it was Spike TV, so some of that stuff doesn't worry me too much. So yeah, sure, why not? If you're going to do it, take that original story. If you think there's enough there that can actually get a feature length, go for it. We'll discuss whether or not there is by the end of this.
Matt, what about you? Were you encouraged by the fact that we're just kind of hitting the reset button and starting
to a point, but I love how the producer of this said, now is the time to bring respectability after, what, 8 movies? Now it's probably a bridge too far. As far as this, look, I think remakes are justified in 2 instances. When you have a great premise that didn't get it right the first time, and when it's an adaptation. This checks both of those boxes of justification. And like I said, I don't think the first one's a good movie, so I do think there is room for improvement. But when I see sci-fi original movie, the bar for that is pretty low. I mean, when you're shoulder to shoulder with things like Lake Placid 3 in the Rolodex on television, and I would rather watch Lake Placid 3 if you forced me to pick between the two, I was praying to my own who walks behind the rose, praying he would turn off my television so I wouldn't have to watch this. I thought I had an excuse because you couldn't find it on any channel, but nope.
Here we are. So we open up in the year 1963 on a cornfield, and fixate on a pig being sacrificed as a kid gives a sermon. And let me tell you, I want this kid's vest because that thing was fucking awesome.
Well, when I saw 1963, I thought they were going to say he who walks behind the rose was behind the Kennedy assassination.
One thing Borchers really wanted to fixate on was the fact that in 1984, and we talked about this when we reviewed that original movie, they weren't necessarily kids. We had people who were probably in their teens, maybe early 20s in that fucking movie. Here, Borchers got real kid, and I don't know if it adds to the authenticity or just kind of makes me say, oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, it makes me think that he went down to the local Boys and Girls Club and said, hey, kids, who wants some candy? I don't care if you can act, but at least you can stand there, right? Oof. Hey, he got kids, so he at least cares about the authenticity. I'll give him that.
Wow, so you're knocking the kids acting.
You know what? We're a few minutes in. I'm knocking everything in this goddamn movie. So, yes, it's going to start right here with the kids.
So this boy says that they drown in sin because of all the adults in the world. He also says that God has spoken to him and there isn't one adult who isn't wallowing in their sin. He goes on to say that there's a God of Old Testament and New, and he who walks behind the rose makes it their time to make sacrifice and their time to kill as a child leads them. So, not unlike anything we heard Isaac say, right, Matt?
Wasn't this their Isaac, basically?
Yeah, that's pretty much what this is.
First of all, if you're going to cast a kid, call the prop department and let them have an actual hat that fits him, because this oversized hat that looks like his father was a preacher and he stole his hat, it takes me out every time he gives a sermon, and I think this kid is abysmal. When you make John Franklin look like Haley Joel Osment, you are a very far down the ladder of suckitude.
We cut to 12 years later as a radio is changed, and two are written more like the couple in King's story. And Adam, you know what? I really had to bite my tongue, because way back when we did that original review, you mentioned that Vicky in King's story is insufferable. Adam, here we have Vicky in all her glory, and boy, oh boy, she is insufferable, isn't she?
God. She's insufferable, but I kind of understand, like, both of these people. Like, after spending about 30 seconds in the car, I'm rooting for he who walks behind the rose to come and throw this thing off a cliff. Both these people are insufferable. Like, I hate these two. King really just, I don't know, he likes writing just despicable characters who are not good people. And both of these fit that bill.
Yeah, he's correct on both. You know, the one thing you could say about the original is at least they're relatively happy people. This one, they are at each other's throats constantly. And the fact that I think both of them give terrible performances, and I know they're not bad actors, because I know this guy from Alias back in the day.
Yeah.
He was on that quite a while. He's one of the more recurring characters. And I know Vicky, not just from Carrie, but she was in Hemlock Grove.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And she's on Battlestar Galactica, so she's kind of in my good graces, but,
Here's what I'll say about this. When we reviewed that first film, we mentioned that King had written a screenplay that the creative team pretty much rejected, and they went with a new version that was written, and we had the two kids and the cuteness behind that and everything else. Here, Borchers decided, and this is probably why King agreed to the screenplay credit, to kind of go back to that. And like that first screenplay, we are spending about 10 minutes with these people, and I'm with both of you. I think these two are insufferable. Let's also not forget that this story was written. King was a different person then, And we're going to discuss when we get further into his oeuvre that he's better at writing characters later on in his career. But here, you guys are absolutely right. It's time we start rooting for He Who Walks Behind the Rose, because these two just, I can't stand being in their vicinity. And I don't know if Borchers was just kind of going for exactly what King was going for in that original screenplay or what, but at least the original director knew to make them likable. These two are just not likable.
You actually hit one of my points that the only reason I could see that King signed on to have his name attached to this is because he went to him and went, hey, look, I made these characters just as shitty as the way you wrote them. You like that, right? Because,
yeah,
I mean, this is exactly what they're like in the book. For all their foibles and as bad as they're written there, they're written the exact same way here.
So Bert tells Vicky to check the roadmap, and she gets snappy. She just looks at him with contempt as he turns off the radio and apologizes. She says that she can't drive because she gets migraines, yet she can't navigate either, and she says the next town is Gatlin. A kid gets right in front of their car with his throat slashed, and Bert hits him head on. My God. I'm pretty sure all three of us saw the DVD version of this, right? Well, I know Matt did. Adam, you saw the uncut version of this, shall we say, right?
Based on something that happens later on, yes, I can guarantee I saw the version.
All right, so Borchers doesn't hesitate on the violence, does he? I mean, we see this kid get run over, and my God, this is pretty tough stuff.
We see this kid get run over like five different times.
Yes!
As he films it from every angle. Okay, I feel like I see him get hit, then I see him get hit from further away, then I see him get hit from the other angle, from the left side, from the right side, up, down. He really works it in, and not just, or maybe just because he needed to pad the runtime. But he set up five cameras, and you're going to see them all.
I feel like there was a compromise, though, where it's like, okay, you can run this kid over so many times, it might as well be a cutscene in Grand Theft Auto, but we're not going to let you show a child getting their throat slit. That's kind of a step too far, especially for sci-fi. You know, this is not HBO, where you don't necessarily have standards and practices. So I feel like there was a little bit of, like, push-me-pull-you going on with how this was done.
Well, a few minutes later, he peels him off the fucking pavement like it's fucking sandpaper. So I don't know if I go with that.
Yeah, 2009 or when this would have been done, like 2008 sci-fi is a little different than now where they just let kind of whatever go. Watch Happy, everybody. But I agree with Matt. I think that they found ways to hold back on certain things just to allow other stuff to go. And it's an interesting decision.
Well, this was aired on sci-fi and then a uncut DVD was released a few months later. So the version of this that aired on the Sci-Fi Network is not the DVD version. So a lot of this stuff, including the language and the violence and the scene that you mentioned, Adam, wasn't in that first version that aired on the Sci-Fi Network. This hitting of this kid doesn't help Vicky's contempt as she just keeps repeating that he's dead and throws up outside of the car. She walks up to the kid saying it's manslaughter as he opens the hood and grabs a blanket. She asks how he handled it in Nam in all the hooches, and she continues to yell at him until he slaps her. She responds with, "You're going to jail!" Oh my God. This couple, they get on the road. I mentioned this was what, like a second attempt at a honeymoon?
Second honeymoon, yeah. That's the only through line you have to go on. This is basically before midnight if it sucks. They're just going to try to save their crumbling marriage.
So Bert kneels down to turn the kid over, and we see his carotid artery was severed, meaning that his throat was cut, and he says that he ran him down, but he didn't kill him. She goes to look and sees his cutthroat, and he says that he's going to cover the boy up and put him in the trunk. He wraps him up and takes him to the trunk. He tells her to start the car and wait because he's going to walk in the fields and see just what it was that killed the boy. So let's just investigate. Vicky says that she doesn't want to sit in the car by herself, and he responds, at this point, I don't care what you want.
You know, it's funny. I have a best friend who has gone on road trips with not always the nicest person in the female persuasion. And Garrett, I swear you've had some conversations like this.
You're not wrong. You're
not with the current at all. She's wonderful and way too good for you. But I think I know who this person is in your life.
Oh, boy. So Vicky gets in the car and locks the doors as Bert takes his gun into the field. He sees blood on some leaves as well as a briefcase. He bends to pick it up as a boy appears behind him. Meanwhile, someone appears in front of Vicky and she keeps honking the horn. She gets out and asks where Bert is as he grabs her and says that, I thought I said to stay in the car. She won't grab the briefcase as he throws it in himself and takes off. We then see two kids meet in the middle of the street as Halloween-type music plays behind them. This was a weird shot. Like, it almost seemed like an insert, right? Like, we're seeing these kids, like Michael Myers, just kind of get on the street at dusk and just kind of look behind them.
When we discussed that first film, one of the things we thought might make it better was if they made it a little more mysterious and a little more of a mystery instead of revealing everything at the beginning. Based on the way that this first 10, 15 minutes, because one, every shot in this takes forever to get through, Yeah, that's an absolute wrong call. If you want to make this a mystery, if you don't know what's going on, this is the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, this is too far in the other extreme. We're going to not explain the general conceit. We're going to give you a through line. But then there's things we're going to explain about the cult that I didn't want explained in the first place. Fornication being one of them.
Oh, you guys keep bringing that scene up. I have a story for it once we get there. Meanwhile, Vicky says that she was afraid, as Bert says, he felt something else was behind him, which was the first time he felt that way since Nam. Vicky asks why someone would kill a kid, and Bert suggests opening the briefcase to find out.
Why not? Dickens did it.
Yeah. Bert admits he took his eyes off the road as Vicky expresses they haven't seen a car or person for over an hour. They turn on a sermon on the radio, which goes on about the corn, and this catches Bert's ear. Bert pulls up to a gas station and says he has to report what happened, and Vicky is just looking forward to getting home to sunny California so that she can get away from Nebraska. He goes to a phone as a kid in a mask appears behind him. Bert gets back to the car and says that they'll be in town within a few minutes, indicating he didn't have any luck. So, we knocked the first film a lot for reasons that you mentioned, Adam. Are you having any more of a better time with this than he did with that first film?
None. And the reason is the quality of everything that's going on. I understand that there's a decent version of this that can maybe be made. But you know what? There's not enough in that story to justify a full-length film. I'm completely convinced of that after this specific telling. But everything in this is of the absolute lowest possible quality, from the way that it's shot, to the actors you put on screen, to the kids that you hired with candy and comic books to come walk on your set. This thing is just intolerable to sit through. This shows that that first one, as bad as it is a giant step up when someone is at least competent, because this says incompetence written all over it.
Wow.
This franchise has broken me so much, I forgot what being fun actually means.
You guys are killing me, because you know what? I'm going to say, at this point, I'm not having too big of an issue with this film. Now, there is a turning point, but at this point, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, this is a pretty decent telling of it, with the exception of Vicky's just complete nagginess and everything else behind that relationship, which gave me some big PTSD. I looked at this and I was like, you know what? I'm not having too bad a time with this.
I think if, as a movie maker, if you want me to keep watching your film, I have to care about somebody or like somebody. And at this point, I don't like either of the characters. I don't give a damn about the kids. Luckily, I like corn, so I guess that's what you want me to like. But one of your two main characters either has to be likable, has to be nice-looking enough to carry somebody's interest, and I'm using that as a completely superficial way. There's nothing in this that I'm liking. If it wasn't for the way that I'm tied to a frickin' scarecrow out in a field being made to watch this, I would have lasted 10 minutes. There's no one here that would make me keep watching.
And to me, sitting on these airwaves.
but to me, and that goes back to the source. King just writes, he doesn't write anybody likable at this point in his career. And I think that's a problem with this story. Nobody's likable.
So they pass by signs on the road that give communion. Vicky opens the suitcase to reveal a shirt, belt, and a gold something or another. She expresses hatred for religion and what it represents. And she finds a hat in the briefcase, as well as a corn stalk shaped in a religious sect. The blue man, who was a policeman they have strung up, is shown, and this is from the story, and they do this in the word for he who walks behind the rose. Meanwhile, Bert and Vicky, they enter Gatlin, and Vicky smells fertilizer. She tells Bert to stop, as Vicky says that they need to turn around and drop the body off at Grand Island, as no one was here. Bert asks Vicky to join him, as Vicky notices the blood on his headlight. Bert then hears a kid as they enter the grill. We have some quick cuts as well as some sounds of some flies roaming around. So, Borchers is playing with sound here, and I think he's trying to get a sense of drag going, but Adam, according to you, it's not working, huh?
Well, you know what? Give me that original short film that we watched way back when.
Yeah.
And I think that actually gets the sense of dread that this wants to, but it can't. Whether it's because of the budget, because it's TV, because of the direction. Like, I can almost appreciate that he wants that original short film feeling, but it doesn't get there.
We see kids on the outside as Vicky explores the place, and I do like how the murders in the beginning are left out this time, and we're kind of in the mystery with these characters. Adam, you mentioned earlier you didn't really like that, right?
Nope.
They go back to the car, and Vicky says that she's sorry, but she says no to moving forward to report it before whoever did it is far away. And she brings up Vietnam yet again. And by the way, this is from the story. But in the story, Bert is actually a Vietnam medic, and not exactly a soldier.
There's a way to modernize this enough. Even though to do a TV movie in 2009 to reference Vietnam and to do it so poorly, it doesn't land at all.
Yeah, but don't forget it takes place in 1963 as well.
And that's just a bad choice to keep going there.
I agree.
I mean, especially 63, 75, your time frame and them deciding Vietnam, I don't think these screenwriters really know the time frame of when we were involved to what levels, because it barely matches up.
Yeah,
barely.
They said it was like 12 years later, I believe, after that first scene. So
yeah, so this would be 75. 75.
So Vicky picks up, go ahead.
So if he got out in 68 to 70, depending on his age,
yeah, you're right.
But then again, I'm sorry, it goes back to King. It really does.
Vicky picks up the cornstalk and says, "You play your games, I'll play mine." We then cut to the kids welding as David is told to not let the Outlanders escape.
That's crap.
I know.
I got a note in here. Like, I have no idea of all the farming. I can go with that. But suddenly you got, and hey, Garrett and I are of an age that you had metal shop, car shop, and all that in school. Our computer lab was two computers, and that was brand new.
Playing Oregon Trail.
But to have these kids...
Yeah, they died of dysentery before they had action.
Have high-quality metal working. These kids are welding.
Hey, thanks, no child left behind.
Bert says towns just don't shut down in the 70s, and Vicky notices that the stoplight is dead. Bert sees a church sign dated last Sunday and concludes that he who walks behind the rose must be another name they use for God. He says he's going in for about 10 minutes and then coming back out, but Vicky says that if he's not back in 10 minutes, she's going to just drive away without him. You fucking bitch. She says that he's capable of assaulting her as he grabs her purse and empties it out in the car, including the keys and coins. Now he doesn't even trust her to stay for 10 minutes, and this is looking a lot like King's first script for the original film. Vicky says he can say that he hates her guts, but he says that he doesn't. However, he's going to go ahead and go in as he's sick of her tantrum. But she feels something is definitely wrong here and begs him not to leave her. But he does, and she does indeed throw another tantrum before rolling her window up. We cut to Bert, who's wandering around the church as kids start surrounding the car and they need to protect their town from sinners. Now, I like this shot. I like the shot that Borchers uses here of the overhead of the car as the kids surround it. I think that's kind of foreboding, actually. I like some of the shots done here.
Man, I'm just... You're fishing for compliments in this barren desert.
I am. And Adam, you brought up Disciples of the Crow, you know, the first thing that we reviewed a couple years ago from The Night Shift, and I'm getting feelings of that here, and I'm liking what I'm feeling. Adam, did you at least feel any sense of foreboding when we see the kids kind of surround the car from overhead?
Yeah, and it feels like a shot from that short, but I can't stand her so much that I want to cheer on these kids. Do it. String her up. And then go get him, too. I think because I can't stand her, and I can't stand him, so I don't blame her. I don't blame him. These two people. You ever see that couple in a toxic relationship? So maybe if I cared that she was going to get killed, I would like it better. But yes, I can appreciate, quote-unquote, the shot that it made.
We cut back to Bert inside the church as he catches random Rob Zombie-type drawings and messages on the wall, as well as a Bible. We go back to the car as kids are running around, much to Vicky's ignorance. She's had enough and gets out, leaving the door open as she yells, "Who's there?" The kids stop in front of her and say that they are her destiny. Isaac kind of makes a swimming motion in the air before Vicky gets back in the car and honks the horn. Meanwhile, Bert's reading from the book as pages are ripped out. He pulls out another one that has a different sermon on it. We cut back to Vicky as Western music plays, and David tells her that they've come to give her peace as they surround the car. Bert sees obituaries for many people who died on the same day as the car is destroyed with Vicky inside of it. And again, I'm seeing these kids kind of destroy this car. I like this.
Okay, I'm laughing. If all the adults in the town are dead, who wrote the obituaries?
We then get a fight between a big kid and Bert as Bert just lays him out. This made me laugh.
Matt and I are sitting here chanting, "One of us, one of us."
This pisses Isaac off, and he throws what I thought was a ninja star, but is actually a knife into his shoulder. And guys, this is the point right here. When Bert takes this knife out, breaks it in half, this is when it just gets, it gets insane. Bert tells everyone to watch as he just kind of takes the knife out and breaks it and says that they're going to have to do better than that. He says he's leaving now as everyone there belongs in an asylum. He asks where their parents are, and Isaac says, "In the corn." We get Bert breaking a kid's arm, Steven Seagal style, and then he breaks the neck of another. How am I supposed to root for this guy?
He breaks the arm, and then the arm is perfectly healed when the kid then attacks him 30 seconds later. All right, I've mentioned it before this. I live in a town where we got a lot of corn, but there's a town right next to mine called Byron, which is a tiny little nothing. And it feels like exactly where this is filmed, including this little alley. But this quote-unquote action scene feels like it was written and directed by Helen Keller. It's so get beyond the pale, it's ridiculous. Including that amazing knife throat that he did from the top of a building. Oh my god.
Yeah, apparently the kids went to the same military off-site training program that Rambo was involved in.
But remember, these kids are metal workers. You know, they don't bring anything here to this fight.
Bert tells them to put that in their gut and smoke it as he runs away.
That's how you can tell this movie was made in 2009.
It's just funny because I guess we're supposed to be scared at the fact that it's not the kids that we're supposed to be scared of, but the number of them as he kind of runs in these fields, but I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, especially because he could take them out so easily.
Yeah, exactly.
This is one of the few movies in this franchise, how is this for low-hanging fruit, or low-hanging corn, if you will, that they finally recognized, oh, grown men can just take down these kids very easily.
Yeah.
Which I have huge questions about in a future movie we're going to review.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Bert goes inside the corn as the kids just stop, as they don't want to go in without Malachi and Isaac. Speaking of which, Isaac tells Malachi that it is a sign that Malachi's faith has weakened, and he who walks behind the rose is now revealed, and asks if God speaks to him, will he accept his will? And Matt, you're absolutely right. This kid is just... I hate putting down kid actors, but this kid is just horrible.
I think it's fair to put down kid actors, considering a lot of Stephen King movies have very good child performances in them.
You're right.
We live in a world now where you look at television, things like Game of Thrones, where you see that the kid actors have good stuff and all that. So we can stop pulling our punches on kid performances.
Malachi and Isaac join the kids, and Isaac tells them that this outlander is just like the blue man. They come after him, and the chase is on as corn is ruffled and lots of chasing going on here. And the kids run in the rows. It looks like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids when they're just so small. Malachi is told that the man's shadow is near, but there weren't any footprints, so he who walks behind the rows walked right past him, and Joseph was his friend. This is fucking laborious at this point.
All right, this part plays like a video game sequence where it's like fragmented into checkpoints.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a sci-fi movie, so they had to fill something from one commercial break to the next, but this shit is, oh my god, I could watch the corn grow, this shit's so laborious. I had to take Metamucil, I want this corn to pass through me so quickly. Like, just get out.
Bert continues on and wraps the sword on the shoulder, kind of like Rambo. So we have another guy who went to Rambo College, as Matt called it earlier. This is ridiculous.
I guarantee Stephen King loved it.
I don't think so.
Like, he was just like, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. It's walking the rose is like walking the fields of Vietnam, and he who walks behind the rose is Charlie.
These Vietnam flashes are just hilarious, especially when a soldier is seemingly taken by he who walks behind the rose. Like, it's just fucking ridiculous.
He should have taken one of the leaves off these plants and, like, put it on his wound and had it, like, grow into him.
Yeah.
Something. Give me something.
This is so bad it makes the Big Lebowski look like a realistic depiction of post-Vietnam PTSD.
Oh, God. Bert holds a little boy from earlier while crying, and they're in what looks like a crop circle. We're seeing corn being prepared as the kids show back up, and we see that David has a girlfriend. Meanwhile, Bert finishes dressing his wound. During dinner, Isaac is laughed at. Bert, meanwhile, eats some corn as well. So now Bert's eating corn. Isaac blabs some more, talking about fertilization. And all right, so let's talk about this scene.
Yes, elope.
That
elope.
We have here.
Elope.
Apparently, you get one more, and this is not from the book, you get one more moment of, I guess, ecstasy, I guess, pleasure before your sacrifice. So these two fuck in front of everybody. Now, I have watched these movies without Jen in the room. She's never home when I watch these. Like, I've been going through, taking my notes and whatnot throughout the course of a day. The only time she was home and in the same vicinity during one of these movies was this one. And this fucking sex scene. My God, it is straight from Pornhub, man. These two are yelling in ecstasy, and Jen's like, what the fuck are you watching? As she's peering in from the kitchen and looking at this fucking sex scene from Children of the Corn. That is how crazy this guy. Adam, what'd you think of this scene?
But oh my God, I can't believe this is when my son and nephew decided to freaking just get home from school, which is right when this started as well. Because the audio might as well be ripped from freaking like porn voiceover. Like, the screaming and moaning at the same time. You know what? I will say this. It got my attention.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew what was going on, and suddenly I was like, titties! Put that on the poster. You don't know what's going on, but titties.
We haven't had one of these in this entire retrospective.
No,
so
it's also...
You're right, it was new.
It's when I knew for sure that I wasn't watching the sanitized for TV version. It almost makes sense when you're talking about planting crops and fertilizing and all this. I mean, it's creepy when you fucking say fertilization, but it makes sense. It is done so damn poorly. And then you have this shot of this little kid rocking back and forth with a smile on his face. It feels so freaking dirty. I wanted to go find and punch Matt Gaetz in the face. That's how dirty this made me feel. Like, because that shot is creepy as all hell. But, like, it makes sense in a way that you would do this before you send someone off. Especially if you're looking, because how do these kids keep going? It's 12 years later, and some of these ages don't match up, especially Isaac from then to now. So some of this shit doesn't make sense, but them populating themselves do.
Yeah, this is only here to explain that plot hole of the demographics. I mean, like, it's not the only hole that's being filled in this, but I couldn't believe, first of all, good thing I had the DVD, because I would have been shocked to see how they aired this on network television. I guess it makes sense to air it on Spike TV, because that was the horniest cable channel you could find. And they had a show named Mansers, for God's sake. But it's been the most surprising thing I have seen in this franchise, where I'm like, okay, they have finally crossed into just being horned up garbage, which is the sign you're for franchises in the slums when you got to resort to TNA. Not the TNA that was on Spike TV at this time. Told him not to stop action wrestling, but you got my point.
It's just weird because we have the yelling of, like, right at the point of, I guess, of orgasm, right? At the same time, they show Bert yelling in, like, victory or pain, or I don't know why he's yelling, but it's just, it's a weird juxtaposition of shots and weird editing, and I don't know if Borchers is going for some sort of theme or whatnot, but I was just like, what the fuck are you trying to do with this?
He's trying to make a correlation between the pleasure and pain and the agony and ecstasy. Like, he thinks he's a fucking brilliant artist by doing that, but not in this film.
While all this is going on, Bert spots some bodies, and then we get the flashes, as a Korn movie wouldn't be a Korn movie without a dream sequence, right, guys? Bert talks to himself, trying to convince himself that this is just like war. He squares up the North Star and continues on his journey until he feels an arrow fly by, and we get some Bad Boys type music going on. Bert's tripped up by some vines as the rows close in on him, and he feels trapped. He breaks free of some more vines and backs his way out of the Korn right into the shrine, which has Vicky strung up with her eyes punctured. I like that they brought that back. Not just because Vicky was a terrible character, but, you know, this was some of the scariest imagery from that story. You know, what's weird is I reread the story after I watched this, because I was thinking, God damn, that seemed very close to the story. And you know what? A few things notwithstanding, a few small touches, this is pretty fucking loyal to that story. So I was thinking, okay, are they going to put Vicky up with her eyes punctured? And that's what we get. And that's a pretty harrowing shot. I like that shot.
You know what? It's ridiculously faithful to that original source. It's amazing because apparently they only had enough time to have her in that car and get taken, because this obviously being a dummy, but we don't see what happens. But then we just get the reveal here. And yeah, it's just like it's depicted in the book. So if you want to give a kudos, kudos for the way that is, because we haven't seen this kind of faithfulness be adapted in this version of the story yet. But I don't care because I didn't like her. That's the problem.
That's true.
I don't like her.
I lived vicariously through her because I wanted to pluck my own eyeballs out for the 90-minute duration I was watching this bullshit.
You were jealous.
Yeah, I was like, take me with you.
Here's the weird thing. You guys know who Ruth was played by?
I remember. Alexa Nicholas.
Yes.
She was on Nickel.
Yep. Bert tells the, as he calls them, black pajamaed bastards to come show their faces as he sees the policemen strung up as well. And he has this vision of Vicky waking up and saying that she's been sacrificed by the children in the Korn and having her eyes ripped out isn't so bad. Why doesn't he join her? Again, a pretty harrowing image. I'm liking the end of this, actually. I'm liking a lot of what's brought up here.
I feel like he's talking to me and Matt at this point. Come join us. Pluck your face up.
I was like, it's like the end of Monty Python's Life of Brian, where they're all hung up on the crucifixes singing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Except you have to remove the looking part because they're blind.
Bert yells, and we get a close-up of his mouth as we fade to black.
Oh, God, that is such a 2000s trope.
It really is. We go to another sermon, this time of Vicky, and Isaac says, "The man caused strife like the blue man from before, but he who walks behind the rose always finds them and is always there." As Malachi praises the god and the dead kids are laid to rest and Korn is placed on their bodies. The kids leave the shrine as Isaac yells, "Scarecrow," and we get a shot of Bert strung up with his eyes punctured. We then get a scripture text from John 5:21, which reads, "Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Amen." As credits roll on Children of the Korn 2009.
Now, this was an abrupt ending.
Very abrupt. Although, it's not necessarily the end. Did you guys see the after credits scene?
Wait, what?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
I'm not. There is an after credits scene.
I don't have to lower my score a whole point.
I just want to point out, before we get to this, for all the discussions, Matt and I have said, hey, Garrett, did you see the credit scene? This is the one he sticks around.
This is the one I stuck around for.
Give it.
It's not much. It's basically of Ruth trying to convince Malachi that Isaac doesn't know what he's talking about as she's watching the fire burn. So not really much, but it's an after credit scene, and it is a setup for a sequel, which we never got.
Or do we?
Or do we? Good question. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Children of the Corn 2009? Adam, unleash your fury, sir.
But you had a chance, if you were going to go back to that original source, to either improve on what came before or have a slavish recreation, or really just put that book to screen. And it kind of does all of that in one shot. This is an... Gus Van Sant would be embarrassed by how much this just repeats everything that happened in the previous film of the same name. And it does it so much worse by deciding that it's going to be an exact recreation while at the same time including the despicable stuff from the story that didn't make it into that original. There's no reason to watch this movie. If you like the original one, keep it. If you are a completionist, guess what? This was a TV movie, so you shouldn't have to watch it. This shit made me angry that I'm sitting through. Like, this is the one where I'm like, you know what? This has turned me off so much to this movie franchise, and I was already pissed. But there's nothing to like here. It looks bad. It is shot bad. The acting is abysmal. The characters just reinforce to me the parts of Stephen King I don't like. And yes, this is his earlier work, so maybe that's a part of it. But I can't stand the way he writes these type of characters, because they are exactly the way that they're written in the book. This thing is crap. Vicky smelled fertilizer, and I watched fertilizer. Because that's how I feel going out of this. I don't think there's any reason, really, to give a movie a zero, no matter how new those mutants might be. But for one shot of boobs, I'm going to give this a 1 on 10. But avoid this at all frickin' costs. If you must watch it, just do yourself a favor and run into the cornrows.
Wow. Matt, what do you say?
I'm not going to lie. I was angry.
Wow. It sounds like it.
Oh, really? I hadn't noticed. I feel like I would be like Adam if this was the third movie we had watched instead of the ninth. By this point, I'm beaten down like that scarecrow at the end of this movie where I want to just pluck my eyeballs out and be sent to the afterlife. As a remake, it does a lot of the things I don't like with the conceit, where you change just enough to make yourself stand out, but you don't improve on anything. And in some areas, you take steps back, if that was even possible, especially in the acting department. I don't get catharsis from watching bad people in horror movies get, you know, their just desserts. That's why I'm not the biggest fan of Friday the 13th and those type of franchises where it's just about killing awful people and your amusement. And this kind of has some of those hallmarks. And unfortunately, this franchise is sunk so low, I don't think this is the worst one. In fact, it's going to be fun when we rank these at the end of all this.
Yeah.
There's like nine circles of hell. Like, this is the Dante's Inferno of franchises. None of them, or at least most of them, aren't great. I feel that about this one, but I got through it, which is almost a badge of honor at this point. Like, this is my 10 years in Vietnam trying to get through these movies. I'm going to be nice because it's Christmas time. I'm in a giving mood. Fuck it, I'm going to give it a 4. It didn't make me angry. It was like an empty void that took 90 minutes of my time.
Yeah, I'm more on Matt's side of this. I've been on record. I said I thought the first, I would say, 50 minutes or so were kind of enjoyable. I enjoyed going through this and seeing this story being personified on screen. However, at that 50-minute mark, as soon as Bert gets hit with that fucking knife, this movie just takes a fucking spiral down, and we have 20 minutes of just boredom and this guy just beating the hell out of these kids and breaking their necks and everything else, and I don't know how I was supposed to feel during that. By the end, I was back with it because I thought the final few shots were pretty good. I think Borchers, if he was trying to improve on that first movie, I think he did it. But that might just be my King loyalty coming through. That just might be the fact that, you know, I've gone through these movies and there have been really bad ones, but I didn't think this was near the bottom, and I think this was a good personification of the story. I think it is a better personification of that 1984 movie. So for that reason and that reason alone, I will go a 5. I enjoyed this enough, but it loses its way. If you can get through that first 20 minutes of just despicable characters yelling at each other, and you have been through a toxic relationship relationship where that has happened and you are able to get through that, you're a bigger soldier than most people. And it was tough for me to get through, but after that, I think the horror of these kids really comes through. So 5 out of 10 for me. Next time, we are going to the Genesis, apparently. We're going to Children of the Corn Genesis, which came out in 2011. Matt, this is the one you've been dreading the most, right?
Well, yeah, because the subtitle Genesis makes me think of Terminator.
Anything you expect next week?
Misery, because Billy Drago's attached to it.
Billy Drago, the late, great Billy Drago, is attached to it. Adam, you were really down on this, gave it a 1. Is there a way you can go even further down next week?
There's a way. And if there's a way, there's a king that'll get you there. It's Genesis. I'm assuming, that's assuming a lot, that it's going to give some explanations to the how and why all this started. So, hey, you know what? There could be some interesting stuff there. I don't think it will really be involved, because if you're going to prequelize it, which I assume, but that's just based on a title. I mean, you're throwing out a biblical title that says Genesis. This better be in the beginning. So we'll see. But I think you could do something with it, because we still don't know the how and the why to all this. So, sure.
All right. That's next time. And be sure to keep checking back, because we are going through these pretty quick. And at the end, we will have an announcement of an upcoming retrospective that will, if people don't like going through low-budget horror, they will enjoy the next retrospective. That's safe to assume, right, Matt?
I'll enjoy anything after this. I would enjoy a colonoscopy after this.
All right. Well, let's take a few-day break and get those colonoscopies. Until next time, when we discuss Children of the Corn Genesis, what hath this podcast commandeth? Thank you, boys.
We must sacrifice them both tonight.
Amos was satisfied. We need the woman. She'll bring the man to us.
No. He must be taken without her. We cannot remove her from this place. It is holy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Why don't you put that in your gob and smoke it?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Question not my judgment, Malachi. I am the giver of his word.
And keep coming back, as the boys will continue going through the works of Stephen King in publication order.
He wants you too, Malachi.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice. It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You guys all belong in an asylum somewhere, loony bin. Where are your parents?
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, where we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the Mad Max movies, Avatar, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
You are a sinner. You are the fire of the corn. It will do you no good to curse me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
You know not the laws. He speaks them only to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Assuming that it's ever stopped.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You know, you're gonna keep visiting Isaac. probably something you should know. It's a small town. People are going to talk.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
But you've come back to us.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
It'll make us just like them.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
There ain't nothing out there, Mordecai, except a lot of corn. Stupid old corn.
See you around.
I had to buy a used DVD copy of this.
Holy shit.
Quote unquote movie. Because there was no other way I could watch it. Vince, I can use this as a tax write-off for work.
Wow. Adam and I sent you a YouTube copy of it in our chat group.
And it got taken down.
Yeah, it got taken down. This was last week.
Because they found that we were covering it, and they're like, oh, people are going to, their eyes are finally going to be drawn to this for the first time in 15 years.
Of all movies, YouTube decides to do a copyright strike on.
Yeah, it's right. So, she was also involved in that special that was earlier this year on Max.
Yep.
She was heavily involved in that. She was a big part of the Nickelodeon set of shows that got really popular, and stuff has come out about it since. Weird that she was in this fucking movie.
Yeah, and that was the second most embarrassing moment of her career. The first was being in Red State.
That's like the second time in this retrospective you have thrown an arrow at fucking Red State.
I will keep slinging arrows. I'm like Legolas with that movie. I never run out.
Ha ha ha.